the disappearance of Srinivasacharya, even though it doesn't give his name, the Acharya Thakur there. Srinivasacharya was his very close associate, and that impelled him to write this name. And he expresses the separation from many of the great associates of Lord Chaitanya as well. Okay. Yeah, you can play. Let's do it. She's got a harmonium. Looks like my favorite note is now C. Everyone knows C. Je anilo prema dana karuna prachu je anilo prema dana. Heno prabhu kota gela chaya taku. Kaha mara swarup rupa kaha sanata. Kaha dasa raghunata patita pava. Kaha mora bhatta juga kaha kaviraj. Eka kali kota gela goranatara. Pashane kuti bo mata anale pashiba. Goranga gune ranidhi kotangele pamo. Se sabba sangi da sangi je koi lombila. Se sangana paya kande narottamada. Je anilo prema dhana karuna prachu. Prema dhana. Heno prabhu kota gela chayataku. Jaya Vaishnav Thakur, Vaishnav Thakur, Vaishnav Thakur, Jaya Vaishnav Thakur. And Jaya Vaishnav Thakur, Vaishnav Thakur, Vaishnav Thakur, Jaya Vaishnav Thakur. He who brought the treasure of divine love and who was filled with compassion and mercy, where has such a personality as Srinivas Acharya gone? Where are my Sarup Damodar and Rupa Goswami? Where is Sanatan? Where is Raghunath Das, the savior of the fallen? Where are my Raghunath Bhatta and Gopal Bhatta? And where is Krishnadas Kaviraj? Where did Lord Gauranga, the great dancer, suddenly go? I will smash my head against the rock and enter into the fire. Where will I find Lord Gauranga, the reservoir of all wonderful qualities? Being unable to obtain the association of Lord Gauranga, accompanied by all of these devotees in whose association he performed his pastimes, Narottam Das simply weeps. So, I thought that there's so much material on Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. For some time now, we've had a book called The Ray of Vishnu by Rupa Vilas Prabhu. This was at least 20 years, I think it's been. It was a very nice book. And then in the last few years, Bhakti Vikas Swami has published his massive three-volume biography of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, which is full of all kinds of wonderful nectar. So obviously we have to pick and choose what we'll recount. And aside from some of the more famous interactions he had with Srila Prabhupada, which we'll recount, I wanted to just focus on some of the activities that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur performed that exemplify these six elements of surrender, since that's the theme for the weekend. So before we launch into some recounting of his pastimes, some of you may know these pranam mantras for him. If not, you can just listen. I'll read the translations also. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Namane Shri Varshabandhavi Devi Dayataya Kripabdhe Krishna Sambandha Vijnana Dahine Prabhave Namaha Madhuyojala Premadya Shri Rupanuga Bhakti Da Shri Gaura Karuna Shakti Vigrahaya Namastate Namaste Gauravani Shri Murtihe Dinatharine Rupanuga Virudhapa Siddhanta Dvanta Harine. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Sri Varshabhanavi Devi Dayati Das. This is the name that he was given when initiated by Gaurakishore Das Babaji as his sole disciple. And let's take it apart. Varshabhanavi Devi is a name for Srimati Radharani. Dayata means beloved. So this is a name for Krishna. Varshabhanavi Devi Dayata. So that is Varshabhanavi Devi Dayata Das. Who is favored by Srimati Radharani and who is the ocean of transcendental mercy and the deliverer of the science of Krishna. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, the personified energy of Sri Chaitanya's mercy, who delivered devotional service which is enriched with the conjugal love of Radha and Krishna, coming exactly in the line of revelation of Srila Rupa Goswami. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, who are the personified teachings of Lord Chaitanya. You are the deliverer of the fallen souls. You do not tolerate any statement which is against the teachings of the devotional service enunciated by Srila Rupa Goswami. So, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur appeared on February 6, 1874. And there's some wonderful background to his appearance. Of course, he was the son of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he had other children, but he prayed that he would get a ray of Vishnu, someone who would carry on the line, who would continue the mission that he had started. Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself was a great revolutionary. He really uplifted the science of bhakti as taught by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu after it had been eclipsed. After the disappearance of Lord Chaitanya, there was, over the years and the centuries, there was a lot of upper sampradayas that grew up. Sahajiyas, you heard of the Prakrita Sahajiyas. Prakrita Sahajiyas means materialistic devotees who take things easily. Sahajiya means easily. It means, oh, we don't need shastra. We just chant and dance. You know, four regular principles. It was spontaneous. You know, in this way, they caused The science of bhakti is taught by Lord Chaitanya to be seen as some kind of excuse for lascivious activity. It was actually a very, very serious situation. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he has his own biography, is amazing, but he began writing so many books and preaching. He was a magistrate. He was given the post of magistrate. He was very much appreciated by the British who were ruling India at the time. This is the latter part of the 19th century and middle to latter part. And he rose up in the bureaucracy there that they had put in place, and he was highly appreciated, given so many posts as a magistrate. So he had that responsible position, but at the same time, he was cultivating and revealing this Lord Chaitanya's teachings in their true form. And to that end, he wrote many books, and one of his most famous activities is actually pinpointing the place where Lord Chaitanya appeared in Mayapur, called the Yoga Peet. That itself was a great endeavor. We won't get into detail about that. So, but he didn't know, he didn't have an organization. This is the thing. He had no organization. So he realized that for the mission to continue, someone would have to take up the mission seriously. So he prayed for a son who would do that, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is the one. He was known as Bimala Prasad. He appeared in Jagannath Puri on that date I mentioned, February 6, 1874. The umbilical cord was wrapped around like a Brahmin thread. From the beginning, the signs were all very auspicious. And he was absolutely brilliant. He had what's called eidetic memory. You read it once and I'll remember everything. Can you imagine? We have to read 10 times just to remember a small fraction of what's on the page. But so by the time he was like 5 years old, he knew the whole Bhagavad Gita by heart and could explain the verses. He didn't just know it by rote. 5 years old, 6 years old. So he was very, obviously very, very precocious, and he just inhaled, as he learned to read, the books of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. That was his main reading subject matter. But still, despite not really being serious about studying in school, he was a brilliant student. He passed all of the tests with flying colors, though he was studying books. So I wanted to... There's a famous event that Srila Prabhupada recounts, and this is the first element of him showing Anukulyasya Sankalpa, because I wanted to show some of the how he manifested. So this is the most of you probably know this incident, where as a little child, he ate a mango that had not yet been offered to the deity. So I'll just recount this. When he was a small boy, perhaps 2 or 3 years old, Bhaktivinoda Thakur brought some ripe mangoes from the market. Bhimala Prasad took one, saying, "This is mine." And Bhaktivinoda got up and said in a grave voice, "What is this? New fruit has come into the house? It has not been offered to Giridhari, and you have taken it first? Remember, new fruit is to be given first to the Lord. Without giving to the Lord, nothing is to be taken." The child, 2 or 3 years old, he repented. "Oh, what evil thoughts I have had. Throughout my whole life, I shall not eat these again. This is the right punishment for one who is ruled by greed." 2 or 3 years old. So he actually followed that vow throughout his life. Prabhupada recounts how they would sometimes offer him mango, and he would say, "No, I am a great offender." So in this way, he showed this. Of course, it's not that he gave up the mango. That's not the important thing, but he accepted the vow. So I took this as an instance of his accepting what is favorable. Now, as he grew up, he was a brilliant student, and he was steeped in the books of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And I think Bhaktivinoda Thakur disappeared in about 1911. Bhaktisiddhanta had developed his skill in astronomy and astrology. And the way he described it, he says, well, he left college. This is one of the things that shows how he gave up what was unfavorable. Because he felt that if he had graduated, there would be tremendous pressure on him to get married. And he had already started a club in the college of serious Vaishnavas, seemed to be very serious at the time. And one of the parts of the vow was they would remain celibate. And so there was no question of marriage after that. It described that he was the only one who actually followed it as time went on. And so he never graduated from college, actually similar to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada had a different motive. It was part of his involvement with Mahatma Gandhi's movement. But he felt he needed some honest means of livelihood. And so he took up this astrology, and he, of course, he became very expert. He became known as Saraswati from translating the Surya Siddhanta. Sometimes devotees think he wrote the Surya Siddhanta. He actually translated this ancient text into Bengali. And that act alone was an act of great erudition. And he was given the name Saraswati for that. So he was offered a chair in astronomy at the University of Calcutta. This is how skilled he became. But he declined, thinking it an impediment to his spiritual life. Because all this time he's still cultivating, you know, he's still chanting and everything. And following Bhaktivinoda Thakur's books. So then comes the point of initiation. He hadn't received initiation yet, although he received the mantras from Bhaktivinoda Thakur that he was chanting. He hadn't formally received Diksha initiation. So Gaur Kishore Das Babaji had come from Vrindavan, and he was a siddha who had been performing Vrajamandala Parakram and just hearing and chanting for decades in Vrindavan. And he specifically came there to Navadvip to get Bhaktivinoda Thakur's association. This was one of the main reasons. So because he loved to hear him, he was known as a very erudite bhakta, scholar. So at Bhaktivinoda Thakur's urging, Bhaktisiddhanta approached Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji for initiation in early 1900. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji expressed reluctance to accept him. He had no disciples up to that point. Knowing that Siddhanta Saraswati, as he was known at that time, was a great scholar, because the standard practice was that if there was some exalted or famous person, it would be a very great feather in your cap to get him as a disciple. So he felt that this would be seen as that he's trying to get some kind of fame. He was completely detached. So finally, when Siddhanta Saraswati pleaded with him for initiation, Gaur Kishore replied, I will ask Mahaprabhu, I will ask Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He had that kind of a rapport. If he gives permission, your desire will be fulfilled. On another day, Siddhanta Saraswati approached him a few days later, a week later. He says, what did Mahaprabhu say? What was his order? Gaur Kishore said, I forgot to ask him. And the third time he was requested, he replied, I asked him, but I didn't receive the command of Mahaprabhu. So Gaur Kishore, then he said, Siddhanta Saraswati then stood up. His heart was breaking. And he said, you, Lord Chaitanya and Gaur Kishore together, are both worshippers of Krishna, the crest jewel of the Bauchis. Therefore, why will you take mercy on someone dedicated to ordinary morality like me? So he was painting himself as a follower of ordinary morality. In other words, he was trying to figure out why he didn't get initiation. In his pastimes as the exemplary teacher, Mahaprabhu has given instructions on the worship of Krishna, the crest jewel of the Bauchis. Therefore, why will he give the command to take mercy on me? But if there is no mercy, weeping and weeping, I can sustain my life no more. This is one of the songs of Narottam Das. But he was serious. If I don't receive your mercy, I don't see any need for living anymore. So he was indicating he would jump off the bridge or take his own life. After thus indicating his readiness to take his life, Siddhanta Saraswati began to cry. Gaur Kishore's heart was melted to see this, so he told him to take a bath in the Saraswati and come back to him. At the time of initiation, he gave Siddhanta Saraswati the name Sri Varshabhanavi Devi Dayata Das. And later, when he took sannyas, he was known as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And the author describes here that it bears resemblance to the pastime of, you remember how Narottam Das took initiation from Lokanath? He also hadn't taken any disciples. And Narottam, for a whole year, he did this menial service of just cleaning up after him. And finally, Lokanath said, who's been cleaning up? And he found out it was Lokanath, so he initiated him as his only disciple. So what happened was that there's a whole history. In Puri, there was a devotee, a Vaishnava, who was named Radha Ramana Charana Swami, something like that. I think that was his name. And he was of this opinion that the Hare Krishna mantra should not be chanted in kirtan, that it should only be chanted in japa. Even though there were verses by Rupa Goswami, Hare Krishna Tuchai, he had one of the verses of his ashtakas at the beginning of his Stavamala, describing Lord Chaitanya chanting loudly, chanting japa loudly. You know, so it's, in other words, but he's chanting out loud. So anyway, there was this huge dispute that developed between Bhaktivinoda Thakur and this devotee. He had a big following, and he was saying, oh, we have another mantra. He made up this mantra, which I forget exactly. Jaya Nitai Gaur Radhe Sham Japa Hare Krishna Hare Nam. It rhymed, you know. And he was preaching this, and they were chanting japa like that. And Bhaktivinoda says, no, no, no. So it was a big conflict. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati got into it, I think at a later date. Well, this was in 1905. And it became such a controversy, and there was so much, you know, thunderbolts going each way in terms of the followers of them and the followers of Bhaktisiddhanta and Bhaktivinoda, that Bhaktivinoda told him, go to Mayapur and just chant. He told his son, Bhaktisiddhanta, get out of Puri. So in 1905, at the age of 31, he began his great vow. Anyone remember what the great vow was? Chant a billion names of Krishna. Now, 64 rounds is known as 100,000 names. Haridas Thakur would chant 300,000 names a day, which means 3 times 64, 192 rounds. So this is what he began to do, and he figured out that if he chanted 300,000 names a day for 9 years, that would come to a billion names. So this is what he's doing. So it describes, I'll just read this little passage from the book. He resided in a grass hut at the Yogapeth for 4 years, just a little grass hut. And in February of 1909, he built a cottage near the Yogapeth on the site of the house of Chandrasekhar Acharya, one of Lord Chaitanya's intimate associates. This place is considered non-different from the banks of Radhakund. Because, you know, the whole Mayapur area is considered non-different from Vrindavan, those who know. There he remained, uninterruptedly executing his chanting. He strictly followed his vow and observed Chaturmasya. Now, how do you observe Chaturmasya? You know, we're supposed to, you know, Prabhupada recommended, and it's in the books, that you fast from certain foods for each month. I think the first one is yogurt. Is it yogurt? No, not yet. What is it? Spinach, you know. And then urdal, yogurt, like that, is 4 months. But that's not, you know, that's like baby steps, Chaturmasya. Chaturmasya means you eat once a day, let your hair grow, you know, and you eat once a day unspiced khichdi, which you eat without any hands, like this. You put it on a clean floor, I assume. And you bow down, and whatever you can eat in one bow down, that's what you eat that day. This is what he was doing. Every Chaturmasya for 4 months out of the year. He was just, his austerities were just unbelievable. He would take rest lying on the ground, never using any pillows, constantly chant, study the scriptures. Seeing his renunciation, Gaurakishore Das Babaji said, I observe that the renunciation of Sri Rupa and Raghunath is manifest in my Prabhu. Now notice this is his disciple, he's calling him his Prabhu. This is how humble he was. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati also adopted that same mood. He would bow down to his own disciples. This is a manifestation of Karpanye. This is one of his manifestations. So now he initiated one or maybe two, but this one, the first disciple, while he was there chanting that vow, chanting those billion names in Mayapur, it took 9 years. So there's a whole story about what, this young man. He wanted to take shelter of Lord Chaitanya. He was a serious devotee. But he got involved with one of these bogus Prakrita Sahajas, Abhisiddhantas. And so he had a dream. And in a dream, his guru had taken the form of a lion and was going to devour him. So he woke up, he was startled, he left right there. He'd heard about Bhaktisiddhanta and he went to see Bhaktisiddhanta in Mayapur. And he started hearing from him because he would also preach. Even though he was chanting these 300,000 names, which would, I calculated, at 5 minutes around, actually Prabhupada confirmed this, it takes 16 hours. 5 minutes around is a pretty good clip. You know, try it sometime. That's 16 hours, but still, in spite of assuming that about 16 hours of chanting, he's still preaching, you know, to some of the locals. So this devotee, he just became enthralled with Bhaktisiddhanta's preaching, and he begged him for initiation, so he initiated him. Prior to this, Siddhanta Saraswati had never given initiation to anyone. His character was such that he never regarded his disciples as his disciples, but he used to see him as being that which was received from the lotus feet of his guru. He used to address them as Prabhu, just like Gorkhasura. In his address to the Gaudiya Math's first Vyasa Puja, he has addressed his disciple as my friends, rescuers from danger. So this is a perfect example of this karpanya, this sense of humility that's part of the six symptoms of surrender. Now there are quite a few instances in his preaching in which this quality of accepting Krishna as one's only protector is manifest. Very heroic, very courageous. So this is from Prabhupada's remembrance, a little remembrance of Prabhupada. He gave us some wonderful information about his Guru Maharaj. You have to try to understand that one of the big obstacles to the spreading of genuine devotional service was this rigid caste system in which the Brahmins, by birth, were lording it over the other castes. And they were insisting that, no, in order to practice bhakti, you had to be born as a Brahmin. There was all kinds of misconceptions. So our Srila Prabhupada, is that my Guru Maharaj's contribution, one of his contributions, is that he defeated the caste Goswamis. He defeated this Brahmanism. He did it the same way as Lord Chaitanya did. In other words, by great debate. As Lord Chaitanya said, kiba vipa kiba nasa shudra kene noi. Whether is it one as a sannyasi or a Brahmin or even a Shudra, if you know the science of bhakti, you can become a spiritual master. This was in relation to his conversations with Ramananda Roy. Ramananda Roy was not a Brahmin. He was actually a Kayasta, which is known as part of a Shudra class. But he was at the highest levels of prema bhakti. So, but in that conversation, Lord Chaitanya took the role as a student, as a disciple. And Ramananda Roy was a little hesitant, you know, and this verse is to encourage him. It says, no, because you know the science, you can act as a guru. So this was my Guru Maharaj's contribution, says Srila Prabhupada. For this reason, he had to face many vehement protests from these Brahmins of the caste Goswamis. You have to understand, they were getting so much money and so much position from this false position that they had taken. So he's challenging their livelihood, you know. And this is they became very angry. So now Prabhupada is telling about one of the conspiracies to actually assassinate Bhaktisiddhanta. These caste Brahmins, had collected 25,000 rupees and went to bribe the police officer in charge of the area, saying, you take these 25,000 rupees, which is a lot of money at that time, at least I think $25,000 or more. We shall do something against Bhaktisiddhanta and don't take any steps. In other words, he's paying him to look the other way as a police investigator. So they understood that, you know, they would take steps means they were going to assassinate him. The police officer frankly came to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He said, of course we accept bribes. That's a given, right? Of course we accept bribes. We indulge in such things, but not for a sadhu, not for a saintly person. I cannot dare. So he had some virtue, you know. So the police officer refused. You take care. This is the position, because he was so vehemently protested. And this comes up again later. We'll recount another similar instance, which was even more amazing. Now this is another. Oh, and this is another instance of his accepting what is favorable was his acceptance of sannyas. This in itself was unusual. You know, we understand because of our, you know, we come later and Srila Prabhupada instituted in his society. But generally speaking, the Vaishnavas who were going to be renunciants, they took Babaji. They just took Babaji and went to Vrindavan, like Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. And there were many others who would come there. There were many actual Babajis who would simply do parakram and chanting and like that. So there's no preaching going on, you know. So Bhakti Siddhanta understood that the sannyasi would be regarded with respect in society for the same reason that Lord Chaitanya took sannyas. So he reinstituted this Tridandi sannyas, which was not really happening in Vaishnava circles at that time. And so in 1918, he took the name Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj. Now, how was he going to take? His spiritual master was gone. He set up a picture of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji and took sannyas in that way. He was 44 at the time. And he did it according to the Vedic rites, according to Ramanuja. Now, this is another thing that he did. He was so erudite. He studied the teachings of all four sampradayas. And he even published some of the books of Ramanuja and Madhva like that. So he knew all of the teachings of the Vaishnavas. Because his whole point was to establish Gaudiya Vaishnavism as authoritative and as conclusive. Taking sannyas, the situation was unique, this taking of sannyas in this way. Now, there's one instance here, it's interesting, of what Goptritve, of how, you know, relying for maintenance on the Lord. So, when he started his institution, really, he left Mayapur and went to Calcutta. And his first situation was this Ultadanga, where they had this little building. This was before the big building they got. And this is where Srila Prabhupada saw him. It was right after that. 1920 is when he started, and Prabhupada met him in 1922. So, and he started the preaching movement. And he reinstituted something called the Vishwa Vaishnav Raj Sabha. Now, my understanding that this was originated by Jiva Goswami way back when. And what it means is that the leaders of the Vaishnav community get together. The Vishwa, the universal Vaishnav kings. This is a sabha, means an assembly. And the whole point of it is to establish the standard for what actual Vaishnavism is. Because there's all of this confusion going on with the upper sampradayas and the bowels and the owls and the prakrita sahajiyas. You know, one of his mantras that we chant, upper siddhanta dvanta harine, he takes away the darkness from all of these upper siddhantas. You know, these branches that go off that confuse everybody, the innocent. So, he began that Vishnu-Vaishnava Sabha. And had a large meeting was held at the Bengal Literary Society to honor Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Many famous speakers honored him on that occasion. And on Bhaktivinoda Thakur's appearance day, an enormous festival was held for him, Bhaktivinoda, at the Asan, Bhaktivinoda Asan. This was the first name of the Gaudiya Math before he changed it. 1,200 kilograms of rice were prepared. That's a lot, like that's 2,400 pounds. That's over a ton. And the thousands were served prasadam. And then later, after that, it was observed by Saraswati Thakur's followers that there was never any lack of funds or other hindrances to any of his plans or desires. In other words, by that act of handing out prasadam, he got the mercy and he was always given the funds that he needed. Whatever he desired was seen to manifest. This is a good example of the power of Guru Puja. By properly honoring the pure representative of Godhead, the grace of the Lord is invoked and all success is bound to follow. Now here's the second example of Rakshashatiti Vishvaso, being confident in the protection of the Lord. So this is another incident where there was a huge tumult and opposition because he was challenging the established situation. In 1925, Bhaktisiddhanta and his followers were performing circumambulation of Navadvip Dham, which had been a regular practice since 1921. This is the famous Navadvip Dham Parakram that's going on today. The procession was proceeding with the deities mounted on the back of an elephant, and thousands of pilgrims were loudly chanting the holy name. It was a huge procession. If you want to see, they do that elephant procession every Saturday night in Mayapur. Any of you visited, you see, it's quite very impressive. So he's proceeding with the roaring kirtan, with the deities of Radha Govinda, and a vicious crowd attacked the procession, throwing hundreds of stones and bricks. Demonic persons, agitated by the preaching of Saraswati Thakur, who had refuted the various bogus doctrines of 13 Sahajiya sects, like the owls, the bowls, etc., which I mentioned. He was railing against them. He was uncompromising, and no one could defeat him. So this was a great threat. They had instigated the local people against him, so through propaganda. Saraswati Thakur had also debunked, as he would throughout his preaching, the nonsense practices of compulsory fees for viewing the deities and the worship and recital of Bhagavatam for money. Imagine they set up. To get into the temple to see Kishore, you have to pay $10. Just to get fees, just to see the deities. Yeah, just to, you know, it becomes a business. Yeah. So there's some pujari, you know, ring the bell, open the deities, and charge something. Plus the famous Bhagavat Saptaha, where you just read the Bhagavatam, mostly the rasa dance cycles, and, you know, Bhajan Raya Maharaj loves to tell this story, how there was one the Saptaha going on, and the leader was reading the rasa dance, and the tears were coming down, you know, and people were saying, oh, he's in ecstasy, and this and that. So one of our devotees was in the back. He got off the stage and came out. He had put some chili peppers into his nose to instigate the tears, you know, like he could get some onions or something. And this is how he was able to cry on cue, you know. The whole thing is a farce. And then people give so much money, you know, the innocent. So Prabhupada, he has several places in his books where he criticized, but Bhaktisiddhanta was fighting it. So both of these things are going on. He strongly opposed the conversion of the deities in Bhagavatam to some kind of merchandise. Therefore, these persons who try to profit by these practices, again, this is a threat to their livelihood, led and instigated the local populace to commit violence on the procession. They're throwing bricks. Saraswati Thakur, the deities, and the pilgrims were all pelted by these demons, but the procession continued unbowed. This was a living example of the adage, the jackals may howl, but the caravan will pass. But you see, he wasn't, you know, they didn't run off. They just continued and they were protected. An eyewitness wrote to Ananda Bazar, a newspaper, and he said, I saw the reenactment of the Jagai and Madai pastime where they were attacked. They attacked Nityananda, you know, but this was en masse. So this is an example of being fully protected. So his pastimes go on, and he didn't have much time. Now, one of the things is about I was thinking, well, what is it that, of course, his whole life shows the full surrender, Atmanivedanam. But one of the things he was doing was constantly traveling. And in those days, it was train, and difficulties, and all kinds of parakram that he would do in holy places. And what he was doing there, he was just not regarding his health. You know, just like Prabhupada did. I mean, Prabhupada did things for his health, but clearly at his age, you know, Bhaktisiddhanta and Srila Prabhupada. So Bhaktisiddhanta passed away at age 63. He was barely 63. But he ran down his health. He started, you know, 64 mats in India. He started the Brihat Madanga printing press. That was he loved that. Famous conversation with Srila Prabhupada as he was walking with him in Radhakund. If you ever get money, print books. And he said to him also, there will be fire. Because, you know, he created this mat, and there was so much influence. Buildings everywhere, you know, in Calcutta, he said, now everyone is arguing who's going to be in what room, you know. Rather sell the marble off the temple and take the money and print books. So this he infused that into Srila Prabhupada, and you know how adamant Prabhupada was in printing and distributing books. So but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, and he even sent some sannyasis to London to begin the preaching in the West. There's a whole story. He had this disciple named Dr. Sanyala, was a very good writer. And he wrote a book. What's the name of it? It's about Lord Chaitanya. I forget the name of the book. But it's about his Leela and teaching. Very nicely done. What is it? Sri Krishna Chaitanya. I think there was supposed to be a second volume because it deals mostly with the early Leela. But wonderful book. And Bhaktisiddhanta wrote a beautiful introduction, and it was produced very elaborately. And this was the book that they were presenting in English to the people in England when they went. Three of his sannyasis, leading sannyasis. But despite, and giving all money, you know, they send a lot of money there for support. I don't know how many years, 1 or 2 years they were there. They weren't able to really do much. They started a little center in London, a little center in Hamburg, a few followers. But then they came back after that time. And so this was, you know, his great desire to fulfill Lord Chaitanya's prediction. That in every town and village of the world, priti means world. It doesn't just mean India. It means the earth. my name will be chanted. In other words, Krishna consciousness will be spread. So, Srila Prabhupada, of course, had interaction with Bhaktisiddhanta, but he was busy with his business and his family. He didn't have that many much personal interaction with him. But he got those important instructions at the beginning, at the very first meeting. You know, why don't you spread Krishna consciousness throughout in the English language, you know? And Srila Prabhupada had this famous, you know, retort, so-called. Well, we're not dependent. I mean, we're not independent. We're a dependent country. No one's going to listen to us. And Bhaktisiddhanta refuted that. He said, no, Krishna consciousness can't wait for any independence. It's completely transcendental to any of these considerations. So Prabhupada says, I was defeated, but I liked it. You know, no one else ever defeated Prabhupada, even in those days, an argument or anything. So he became a follower, and in 1922, this is when he met him, and some years later, he took initiation in Allahabad. And he was, you know, always trying to help the Gaudiya Math whenever possible. And then just, Prabhupada said, about this time, you know, now this is in the middle of December, so I'd say early December of 1936, he wrote to Bhaktisiddhanta, who was staying in Puri, and he said, a little indisposed, he said. And he asked, all your other sannyasis, you know, doing so much service, I can't, I'm too much involved, and what service can I do for you? So a fortnight later, you know, at the end of December, he gets a letter back, says, I think the best thing you could do is to spread our movement in English, you know, which is understood to mean abroad, if possible. Bhaktisiddhanta actually left his body on January 1st of 1937. So just a few days later. So Prabhupada took that instruction to heart, obviously. And he tried to do it in India. He had the League of Devotees. You know, he began his Bhaktikarat magazine in English in 1944. And those issues are available on the Veda base. You can read them if you're in. It's, you know, so many things. The whole history, you know, of how Prabhupada struggle in India and to come to America and start to, that's all. You really can't separate that from Bhaktisiddhanta's inspiration. It's like he's carrying his spiritual master with him, you know. And that kind of determination that Bhaktisiddhanta showed was fully adopted by Srila Prabhupada. And so this is a, you know, glorious day, remembering Bhaktisiddhanta's Saraswati Thakur's glories. And he just exemplified these six symptoms of surrender. He gave his life. He, as I say, he was constantly traveling and preaching and dealing with so much opposition, as we've heard, you know, and also the difficulties within the mat that's developed even before he left the planet. So, and he told Prabhupada, there will be fire. He predicted that there would be this discord within the movement. And really, it more or less destroyed the Gaudiya Math as a preaching vessel. Certainly, you know, nothing like what he developed. So because they didn't follow his instructions and have a GBC, you know, they tried to have one acharya, which was not what Bhaktisiddhanta, wanted, and so Srila Prabhupada was adamant that this idea of this GBC, which would be a conclave of the leading devotees and who would run the movement. So this is, we owe everything to our predecessor acharyas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, of course Srila Prabhupada, and they're just channeling what's just coming down from Lord Chaitanya through the six Goswamis and their followers. So we're very fortunate to be able to observe this Disappearance Day festival. Srila Prabhupada was always very adamant that this be observed during his time. And Srila Prabhupada in 1968 is a famous lecture he gave on this day in Los Angeles, in which he was appreciating how Bhaktisiddhanta had sent his helpers. Who knew that I would take birth in this family and meet this way? Who knew that you would come to me? This is all Krishna's arrangement. And Srila Prabhupada actually begins crying. He can't complete that lecture, appreciating the blessings that he's receiving from his Gurudev and everyone, predecessor acharyas. So this is how we can honor Bhaktisiddhanta. So we can read, there's so much material, and remember him. And I think later there's going to be a Pushpanjali. What time is that? 12 o'clock. Okay. Any other remembrances, questions, Maharaj, if you want to answer? Yes,
yeah.
Please.
Two things. I mean, so many things, but two things. You mentioned that there were two incidences where his life was threatened. One was the bribe to the police officer. Was the other the throwing of the bricks?
Yeah, that's what I was regarding, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The other is his initiation. Prior to receiving initiation from Gaur Kishore, there was an incident where Bhaktivinoda Thakur was creating a residence in Calcutta, and they were digging the foundation, and he found a Kurma deity.
Yeah.
Where they were digging for the foundation, and he gave that Kurma deity along with a mantra,
right,
for his son to worship, which wasn't diksha, it was a mantra to go along with the worship of the deity.
Right.
It's a detail.
Yes, so he was chanting that. I'm not sure if it was the Calcutta, you may be right. I thought it was Swananda Sukada Kunj. I thought it was that.
No, that came later.
That was later, okay.
Much later.
Yeah.
And, just how you stitch together these events of his life along with the theme of what we've been doing this weekend, it was really sweet.
There's such a wealth of material.
So much.
We're very fortunate to have that, those details, just like so many devotees, because we had the Lilamrita, but, remembering so many things about Prabhupada coming out. This is how, this is called association. When you hear about them, you read about them, you worship them, and you get the mercy of the previous acharyas by meditating on their pastimes, get inspiration.
One other thing, just the small. When Bhaktisiddhanta took sannyas, besides, the manner in which he did it was quite extraordinary, he was making a statement. It was an imitating, those who are, because Babaji, yeah, is a stage that's beyond the four varnas and ashrams, and unqualified people were going there and making a debauchery, and that's part of the upasampradaya,
right,
thing that he was against. So he had already demonstrated he had the qualification, this 1 billion names.
Yes, of course. Right.
He was already beyond any varna and ashram. But he made a statement within the Varna and Ashram, so it was part of his preaching mission.
Yeah, that's a good
actually
point.
There's one other thing. That in addition to studying the other sampradayas, it was a core part of his statement that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu united the four sampradayas.
Right.
If you I remember the first time going to his headquarters, the Chaitanya Mat. On the four corners, now they've redone it, but they're little murtis, as you do the circumambulation around the outside of the deity, four murtis of the four sampradaya acharyas, because it was a theme Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has united. Yes. There's differences. There's the unity. The unity is worship of the Supreme Lord, and Mahaprabhu united them all.
Yeah, that's a good point. And there's the four things that he took, and unfortunately, I can't remember them all now.
Two. I'll share it with you.
Go ahead.
I don't have it in my memory. I'm not like you. But I have a text, and I'll share it with you.
Oh, yeah.
Two from each of the four.
Oh, two from each of the four. Okay. Yeah. And Lord Chaitanya's unique contribution to Chinchabeda Beta Tattva. That's what that was the, you know, simultaneously one and different. Because the whole thing is about, are we different? You know, Madhva, absolutely different, you know. And others were more toward the ones, is it one and different at the same time, which is inconceivable. Therefore, it's a chincha, beta, beta, that. Shall we adjourn? Oh, you have something? Go ahead.
Question. Looking at our disciplic succession, yes, our previous acharya, it seems that till Bhaktivinoda Thakur, nobody was doing a serious preaching like book distribution. It was Bhaktivinoda Thakur who first sent a copy of CC,
yes,
in Montreal. So before that, like Krishnadas Kaviraj, he wrote CC, but he didn't.
He wrote the
Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Hold it.
He wrote Chaitanya Charitamrita, but he did he preach? Did he mean send a copy to in places, or he just kept with him? Means there was no serious preaching going on, like book distribution, till the.
Well, preaching was going on, but he didn't have the facility for you know, mass book distribution. So, but he had written so many books, obviously. And some of them were highly appreciated in small circles. But writing the books is one thing. You know, organizing a society of disciples to distribute them is another thing. And so he did have this attempt, and Prabhupada, as you say, Prabhupada saw it as very significant, that the year of his birth was the year that Bhaktivinoda Thakur sent this Lord Chaitanya, his Life and Precepts book, to Montreal, what's the name of that university?
McGill.
So, which was later discovered by Brahmananda, somebody in the library, and showed it to Prabhupada. Prabhupada was very appreciative that this happened. So, this is very significant. This is the year of my birth, and he tied into that. What were you going to
Those
say?
Books went all over the world.
Uh-huh.
There was one found in Burma or Bangkok or something like that. It was so he, Bhaktivinoda, selected universities worldwide sent it out worldwide in. Two were found. McGill, we know about. And there was another one, Burma.
Right.
Someone found in the library there.
But as we know, you know, that's kind of a. I mean, it's an important activity, obviously. But there's a limit to how much that can have an impact on mass society. You need to have someone promoting those books at the Vaishnavs. Otherwise, it's one of many books in the library. It's important. But the most important part of that. Act of sending it to McGill was that Prabhupada saw how, you know, that he took it as important and inspired it even more for book distribution. He took it as a first step. Jitendriya Prabhu?
I've heard that some people say that there's recorded messages of Bhakti Siddhanta, and then some people say there isn't. You know, I mean, at that time there was like movies and, you know, talkie movies.
Yeah.
That came in 1927, and there was, you know, records and, you know, reel-to-reel tape stuff. Is there any that you know?
You know, there was something, but I think it was debunked. It was debunked. Yeah, we don't have any live. Yeah.
So there's nothing. No recorded message.
Not yet. Maybe it'll turn up, but we don't have any authentic stuff yet. Which is pretty, you know, this is pretty amazing, because this is one thing I didn't talk about. Forget the year. Maybe you remember, there was this big challenge from the Brahmins, or who's, you know, the Brahman of Vaishnavism. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur wanted to go. There was a Medinipur. There was a big conclave, and they would. There was a debate that was set. You know, is the Brahmin more exalted than Vaishnav? And like, so he couldn't go. He has rheumatism. It made him incapacitated. So Bhaktisiddhanta wrote a book, the distinction between Brahmin and Vaishnav, like that. And he showed it to Bhaktivinoda and became ecstatic. He said, this is, you know, this is what I'm waiting for. And so Bhaktisiddhanta went in his stead. And this was like, now you could, well, how was the debate going on? There was no microphones, you know, but it was a huge crowd. So would they have megaphones? I don't know, but they're just stentorian voices, but somehow it was going on. And he defeated everybody. You know, he started out praising the Brahmins, quoting so much Shastra. He knew so much Shastra. And they were all feeling very good. Oh, you know, this sounds good. Yeah, Brahmins, you know. But then he started quoting other Shastra, showing how Vaishnavs, genuine Vaishnavs, are automatically Brahmins, and they're at a higher level than just ordinary Brahmins. And so he defeated all of this caste Brahmanism. This is part of the whole caste Brahmanism. And then there was a scene, there was a mass scene where everyone in the audience wanted to take the dust of his lotus feet, practically a riot, you know? And he didn't like that to happen. But the police, there was a lot of police there, they forcibly took his feet, put it in a bucket of water, added more water, and then sprinkled the water on the people and just pacified them. This is what it was like. And that was a very significant event. That book has been translated, by the way, in English, if you're interested. What does that mean? They're taking notes. No recordings, but one of his disciples would take notes, and this is how we have so many accounts of his lectures and things, is that there's careful notes are being taken. Yes, Maharaj.
I did not attend all the sessions, so kindly forgive me if this was already addressed. One doubt still remains for me, the five limbs of, the six limbs of surrender. I'm able to understand five of them as individual, you know, qualities or characteristics. But one, which is full self-surrender, is that just an aggregate of the other five?
There's certain qualities there that aren't the others, but as you say, there's a lot of overlap. I mean, as Maharaj pointed out, humility is kind of the basis of the others, and pervades the others, all the others, right? So it's not like mutually exclusive. But Atmanivedanam was described, because I researched that, is this idea of having no interest separate from the Lord's. That's one thing, this Atmanivedanam. You can see it, you know, in Bali Maharaj, how he surrendered everything. It's like it includes feeling dependent. In one sense, it does have elements of the others. Being completely dependent on the Lord as one's protector and master, and that one is, no matter what, my whole life is simply engaged in fulfilling the desire of my master. I don't know anything else. You know, this kind of full surrender is the highest level. I mean, Atmanivedanam is the final of the nine. And the exemplars are, you know, Bali Maharaj, the gopis manifest the same thing. So it's shown to be distinct, but it does have elements of the other things in it. I mean, the emphasis on simply feeling oneself completely dependent and the only Lord and Master and have no interest separate from the Lord. You know, that's it. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so bring back.
You remember the distinction? What's the term? Akinchanatvam.
And
Sharanagatatvam. So there's two. There's a little, this little section that we discussed. Jiva Goswami says, surrender devotees are in two categories. One, akinchana. No other shelter. And then another is Sharanagata. Or Sharanagatvam, meaning they're actively taking shelter. They have no other interest. They're actively, so it's like the difference between neutrality and proactive. Mm. So Atmanivedana is body, mind, and words dedicated to service. I have no other shelter. Dedication to service. So they have the same characteristics with an additional, this is Jiva Goswami's explanation. Mm. So it's, you know, they're similar. There's overlap. They're not here's a bucket, and here's a bucket, and here's a bucket. It's not like that. And this goes into this bucket. It's just there's a particular feature, as you said, characteristic or quality, dedication to service, body, mind, and words, that just like Tridanda, Prabhupada discusses this. A sannyasi takes a danda that's, in our line, is three rods, Tridanda, body, mind, and words. And then there's actually a fourth one that it means the soul. So everything, dedicated to service. And Prabhupada comments, you know, grihasthas, they can also be body, mind, and words, and soul. They don't take a stick. They do that in another way, another kind of... So that's grihastha sannyas, to dedicate everything into to the service of the Supreme Lord, going back. No separate interest. Only one interest. Akinchana. Only one interest. Dedication. So that's the distinction. Yeah.
You can see, like, Gopta Dveya Rakshashatiti, to regard the Lord as one only protector. But there's no word there about some active service, you see? In other words, I feel completely protected, but I'm not going and doing something. Atmanivedita means whatever I do. You know, it reminds me of the verse, in fact, when I was doing this Atmanivedita, this a verse in the 11th canto, in the Nine Yogendras. And I learned from, I think, Mukunda Dada or somebody, this is a famous verse that a lot of people know this verse. Kayena bacha munasem riyava buddhyatmanava nusita svabhavat kadodi yadyat sakalam barasmai narayana ayeti samarpayetat. He says, whatever you do, and he covers everything, with the body, with the words, with the mind, with the senses, with your intelligence, with yourself, that you have gotten due to your previous activity. In other words, everyone has some of these, or has some configuration of these. You, karoti yajat sakat, whatever you do with any of these, you consider this is an offering to Narayan. You know? This is an offering. So, as Prabhupada points out in a lecture on Yat Karoshi Yat Asnasi, because it's similar to that in the ninth canto. But you can't do any nonsense. You have to do something that actually is an offering to the Lord that He wants. But if you meet this criterion, how you're completely surrendered. Everything you do is an act of devotion for the Lord. So to think in that way at every moment, that's the Atmanivedita platform. I have absolutely no separate interest but like that. But it's active, as Maharaj pointed out. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you very much, Prabhuji. Could you say something briefly about Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's philosophy of Drigdrushya Vichar?
You mean the seen and the seer?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is an interesting thing. I remember there's one recounting in the big biography, I read it. And one of his disciples had visited Vrindavan and come back. And he asked him, well, what did you see there? And he knew. He said, I didn't see anything. I was seen. The idea is that we can't really see the Lord with our present contaminated senses. And we should always feel that, you know, we're not there yet. We have purification. So there's that famous statement, you know, one should not try to see Krishna in every bush of Vrindavan, but one should act in such a way that Krishna wants to see you. This is the idea that we take it cheaply, you know, that I saw Krishna, you know, I see him, I see him, what's the big deal, you know? But the point is that we're not really able to see Krishna. We're concerned that we act in such a way that Krishna is seeing us and that he will reveal himself to us. This is the way I understand it. There may be some more you can add to.
Yeah, that's a philosophy. It's there's a nice story connected with this where during a festival one time they were serving prasadam at the math, and Ananta Vasudev came to a pundit who was sitting, and he was taking prasad, and he was eating the malpura. And he was enjoying the Valporta, and then Ananta Vasudev leans and says, Panditji, are you eating the Malporta, or is the Malporta eating you? And he didn't know what to say. He didn't know what to reply, but he wrote later on, he wrote an angry letter to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sati Thakur complaining. He says, "My wife is very expert at cooking and she can make all sorts of wonderful preparations. Now, what is this question that you're accusing me? I'm being accused of being a sense enjoyer. What is this?" And Srila Sarasvati Thakur said that, you know, who in the world can understand Ananta Vasudeva's question? You know, like this. And it's considered a very important contribution of Vaishnava Siddhanta, because he used to gauge every single religion by that standard. Mm-hmm. That, you know, how you're seeing, you know, what's your consciousness regarding the Lord? Are you enjoying the Lord, or is the Lord seeing you that? So every single religion, that was his yardstick for gauging everyone.
Yeah, you see that the as Prabhupada said, the six Goswamis, they are always looking for Krishna. Where is Krishna? They don't think, oh, now I have seen Krishna, my job is done. You know what I mean? That eagerness to become more purified and to advance so that Krishna will reveal himself is a central characteristic of Chaitanya Vaishnavism. He said, oh, I'm so fallen, I'm not worthy. You know, even Lord Chaitanya would say, what use are these senses, you know, without service to Krishna? I'm just faking it. He would tell it, remember, in the second chapter of the Madhya Lila, he said, I'm just, you know, I don't have any love for Krishna. You know, this is Lord Chaitanya saying. So this is the idea, is that there's always further to go. There's always more revelation. There's always more hope that Krishna will reveal himself. And that keeps us an impetus to advance. Okay, I think we should adjourn. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur.
Yeah. They might consider it a step down.
Yes.
But actually what he's doing is reinstating the Varnashram.